and happy Friday, and welcome to minute 35 of season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham A Movie A Day, and also the shepherd of the Lambcast. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Let me get this Twinkie out of my mouth, and I'll be ready to go in just a second. Oh, there we go. Hey, it's great to be back, Rob.
The minute 35 begins with Trudeau continuing his speech and ends with the FAA hotline going berserk. Yesterday, we finished things off with Trudeau picking up a set of headphones and putting it on and start telling everybody, you know, what the situation is. And he got cut off, and he had to wait 24 hours, and so did all of you listening. You have to wait 24 hours to actually hear the rest of what he says. So he says, every aircraft approaching our sector and not already in our landing pattern gets diverted to their alternate airport now. Everyone already on approach or inside our pattern holds at the outer markers. Stack them, pack them, and rack them. Move. So the biggest question that I have about this whole movie is that, you know, and obviously they need it for the movie itself. But when you're in a situation like this where nothing seems to work, why are you going to keep people in your holding pattern? The idea is, okay, yeah, we have a problem right now. Divert everybody. That's it. Let's fix our problem. And then, you know, they'll be in the holding pattern at a different airport for the time being. And then if we need to, we'll bring them back. But, you know, to keep
that's the main plot hole I see in this movie. Because if I were Trudeau and I had seen what was going on with everything in the tower and on the field, since you still have contact with all the planes before it gets cut off, I'd be saying, divert to your secondary airport now.
That's right.
Don't come anywhere close to us.
That's right. We have a technical issue. We don't know what it is. They don't know yet, you know, why this is happening. So, okay, we have a problem. Maybe, I guess, it comes from the idea that something like this had never happened before. So as far as they're concerned, it's not a big problem. It's something that will fix itself relatively quickly, and then we can move on. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, but remember, at this point, he's already aware that there's a likely terrorist threat that's going on. I would think that if this was happening a decade later, that they'd have had procedures in place to do exactly that, send everybody someplace else immediately.
That's right.
And, you know, maybe it's just one of those things that in the time period they thought, well, you know, we'll get it fixed and it'll be okay and we'll have time. And I think it's just short-sighted.
Yeah. Well, again, as we both said, they need it for the plot of the movie.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. It's not – there's no logic here because it's movie logic. It's what do we need? Do we need this, you know, for the movie or not? And hey, well, you know what? We do. We need all these planes to be circling around. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know, for better, for worse. That's what it is. And then once again, we hear the hustle and bustle of what's going on. Someone screams, get someone on it. You know, there's a guy who's like flipping switches rapidly and stuff like that. Then we have Trudeau taking off his headset. You know, now he starts talking to the people immediately around him, which again, I'm not really sure, you know, what the difference is about when he, you know, during his conversation on, you know, when he's telling everybody with the headphones, you know, he's only talking to everyone in the tower. So like, why then is he, you know, he takes off the headphones and then he starts talking to everyone in listening distance, but that's pretty much everyone in the tower also, because it's not as if the tower is humongous. And he goes, all right, not a word of this leaves this room. There must be 15,000 people in the airport, and we don't need panic. We just bought ourselves maybe 2 hours. After that, planes low on fuel, won't be circling. They'll be dropping on the White House lawn. So, again, it goes back to the logic here. There's no logic. Why is he buying himself 2 hours? Send every plane elsewhere. No need to even try.
Well, and the other thing is, if you were in one of those planes circling there and you lost contact with the airport and they're not giving you the kinds of directions that you needed and you're not seeing any of the lights, I would think I would divert on my own. You know, I'd say, okay, I'm sure they've got contingencies. So
that's right.
But it's movie logic, like you said.
Yeah. Which again, it makes sense from the movie logic perspective, but not from, you know, I'm assuming that most, you know, most people, and especially traffic controllers that are listening to, that are watching this movie, say, oh my God, just divert everyone. That's it. You know, it would have saved so much time and energy.
Well, I think the word needs to leave the room. I don't understand why they aren't on the FAA hotline before it starts ringing from Colonel Stewart. That would have been, I think, my first call.
No, but they first want to try and understand what the problem is, isn't? Don't they?
They know everything's gone wrong, and they know that there are terrorists on the property. I think if I was Trudeau again, that it's called a hotline. Use it.
That's true.
We've got an emergency here.
That's a good point. I realize that. Maybe it's a question of ego.
Well, I think that everybody gets immediately slammed down in just a second when Colonel Stewart shows up and shows how much power he has and control over everything that's going on in the airport, and that they basically don't have access to anything that they need.
Right. I mean, we'll talk about that next week, that once again, there's no logic from that perspective, too. Because once they know it's a terrorist thing, okay, let's get everyone out of here. But nope, they keep them. So, you know, some of the things that they talk about here is pretty interesting. I mean, they talk about the outer marker and insider pattern and stuff like that. I'm not going to go into those technical terms. We're actually in a few weeks, we're actually going to have one or maybe even two guests that know a lot about airplanes. I'll let them explain it so that, you know, I'll even understand, not just what I'm finding online and stuff like that, but what the marker beacon is and the outer marker and stuff like that. You know, the idea that he's assuming that every plane now has enough fuel for 2 hours is also a fallacy, because, you know, there are planes coming from England, there are planes coming from LA, there are planes coming from, you know, yesterday we listed the whole group of places where a lot of these planes are coming from, you know, so why assume 2 hours? Is it, you think that each plane is supposed to carry a 2 hour reserve?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where they have, you know, I don't know that they know what the fuel range is for every plane in the air, unless there's always, you're required to have a certain amount before you fly. You know, before you take off. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, I don't know either. I'll have to try and remember to ask one of those guests in a few weeks if they know the answer to that. That would actually be very interesting to know if there is a true answer to that. That would actually be very fascinating to know. But we'll just have to wait and see. And so they mentioned the White House. So there's two things I wanted to mention about this. First of all, you know, he says that they're going to land on the White House lawn. Okay. Obviously, the security measures in 1890 are slightly different than what they are in 2023 because of 9/11 and numerous other incidents that I'm going to mention here. But, you know, I don't think there's any way that a plane could land on the White House lawn without getting shot down.
They don't suggest it's landing. They are suggesting it's crashing.
That is correct. And but I'm saying
the District of Columbia is not that big. So he's just being metaphorical.
Yeah, no, of course. Of course. He says dropping. So, yeah, of course. Yeah. That's the one place that for sure those planes are not going to be dropping because they probably have some sort of, you know, defense mechanism, you know, working to make sure that something like that is not going to happen. So, first of all, what do you know about the White House itself? Do you know when it was built?
Well, the White House was built in the late 18th century. I know that John Adams was the first president to occupy the White House.
You are correct.
And that, of course, it got torched in the War of 1812. I forget what year it was that it got torched, probably 1810, something like that, or maybe it was 1812 itself. I'm not sure. It was a short war.
Apparently, it wasn't that short. But yeah,
white after that. It wasn't called the White House until later on after it got painted. And it was called The President's House. I've seen The West Wing several times, so I know those kinds of things. I also know, I mean, it was true, this was before 9/11, that no flights directly over the White House are allowed. I don't know how long that rule has been in place, but I know it was in place in the episodes of The West Wing before 9/11 happened, so I am assuming it's probably been a longstanding practice.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's a lot of information. That's great. So yes, they started building it in 1792, and it took them 8 years to finish it. So in 1800, it was finished. Before that, when Washington was living in Philadelphia, he was in the mansion of Robert Morris on Market Street in Philadelphia, and that was known as the President's House, which John Adams moved into that house after him. And eventually moved into the White House on November 1st, 1800. You know, there was a lot of different constructions over the years, but as you mentioned, during the War of 1812, in 1814, the White House was set ablaze by British forces. James and Dolly Madison had to flee. It took them actually quite a long time to refurbish the White House after that. It was only finished in 1817, so 3 years later when they were doing that. The West Wing was added by Teddy Roosevelt in 1901. And then when Taft took over in 1909, he actually expanded the West Wing and created the first Oval Office, which they didn't have beforehand. It's pretty interesting. I think of the White House and I think that, okay, it's always looked the same. But, you know, there's been so many things changed over the years. So that's really, have you ever been to the White House?
I haven't been inside. I have been at the gate and at the fence looking at the White House, but I didn't take the tour.
Mm. Okay. So I actually took a tour or the very beginning of 2001. I was in the States and I went to visit a friend of mine who lives near Washington with another friend. And then we ended up, going on the tour. And the funny thing was that when, during that time, the West Wing was on TV. And as we were walking in, I mean, they didn't take us into any of the, we didn't see anybody. You know, they take us into all these rooms that nobody uses. But when Right. When we stepped in there, someone screams out and says, "Hey, isn't this where they filmed that TV show?" And everyone got a little chuckle out of that one.
Well, interestingly enough, I have been in the locations where they filmed a lot of that TV show, because the Nixon Library has rooms that are reproductions of the East Room and the Oval Office. And I know that they later created an Oval Office set for the West Wing, but they used the East Room at the Nixon Library for filming a lot of scenes that are supposed to take place in the East Room on the series.
Oh, I didn't know they filmed it there. I figured they just filmed it on a set, not that they would go to the presidential library to do it. It actually makes more sense, but it'd be more difficult for everyone to figure it out, to have to take everyone over there every single time.
Yeah. You don't want to have to build a set that big either.
That's true. There is something to that from security perspective. So February 1974, there was a U.S. Army helicopter that was stolen that landed on the White House grounds, which obviously caused a lot of problems. And in 1994, there was a light plane flown by a man named Frank Eugene Corder, which crashed into the White House. And he ended up killing himself by doing that. The White House was evacuated in May 2005 when there was an unauthorized aircraft that was coming close by, but didn't reach there. In 1995, after the Oklahoma City bombing, they closed off more streets around the White House. And after 2001, they actually made that change permanent, that there are even, it's even, you can't get as close to the White House as you used to be able to. About the tours. So we were talking, I mentioned about that I went on a tour there. So after September 11th, they suspended the tours. And then 2 years later, they reopened them, but it was only on a limited basis for either groups or for congressmen or embassies in Washington or foreign nationals that were you know, that are diplomats that wanted to come and stuff like that. But it's remain it's but they it remained closed to the public. And then in 2013, they stopped even the tours for the diplomats. And then they ended up reopening it later that year for anyone to, I guess they have normal tours these days. But the biggest incident that happened, which is very interesting, and I didn't even think about this, I didn't remember this happened, was back this year in January. On January 11th, my birthday, the FAA grounded all flights because of a glitch in the computer system. Did you know that? Did you remember?
I didn't.
Right. So basically,
I'm sure I remember that there was a kerfuffle, some kind of brouhaha about the air traffic and flights being canceled or diverted. I wouldn't have remembered the date or the reason.
Yeah. So back on January 11th, 2023, at 8:30 in the morning, they actually cut off the system. Basically, went down. And it was the first time that they closed down aircrafts, you know, departures and arrivals since 9/11. And it turns out that it was all because of a little glitch that there was apparently maybe they thought it was a damaged database file. But in the end, what happened was is that somebody had done an upgrade the night before. And while they did it, they replaced one file with another by accident. And because of that, the system just stopped working and they weren't able to track planes and stuff like that. Over the course of that day, there were 32,578 flights that were delayed and 409 that were actually canceled because of all this, these problems. So now obviously the FAA has adopted new procedures in order to make sure that things like this don't happen again. The amount of money that it cost just for all of these flights to turn off, I mean, it cost millions to fix all this stuff. So, I mean,
and to think just 30 years ago, John McClane could walk into the tower.
That's right. 100%. And switch a file and there, just turn off the computer and then we're good. and then Trudeau turns to McClane and goes, McClane, is this what you expected? He goes, no, this is just the beginning. And there's like an ominous musical tone right after he says that. And then we hear like a beeping and someone goes, oh, FAA hotline. Barnes says, FAA hotline. Lorenzo says, how could they know already? Trudeau says, they can't. And then the minute ends. So it's a good place to keep people in suspense, you know, over the weekend for what's going to happen. You know, it looks like the bat phone type of thing. You know, the way that it's blinking and beeping and stuff like that. You have anything else to say about this minute before we get into the script, Richard?
I do not.
Okay, so again, the script is very similar. He says, get your controllers on the horn. Every plane approaching are vortexes. You know, in the movie, he says, in our landing pattern. So it doesn't make a difference. He adds another line in there saying, I want every off-duty controller and technician here in 5 minutes. Page the terminal. No, better beep them. So it's a little unrealistic to expect everyone to get out of bed and come in 5 minutes, but okay. And when he turns to McClane and says, is this what you were expecting? McClane goes, this ain't it, pal. This is just the beginning. So you see, D'Souza put in the pal again here.
There you go.
It says a phone rings. Camera adjusts. It's a prominent red phone. I guess it's the Russian premier calling. You know, who knows?
That's it.
Yeah. So every Friday we have a segment, which is called Where Are They Up To This Weekend? Where what I decided to do was I went and you know, go through some of my guests' favorite movies and have them try and figure out, okay, where are they up to in that movie at the same place that we are here? So right now we're on the cusp of finishing up minute 35 on its way to minute 36. So now, Richard, you and I have known each other for a few years, so I obviously know what your favorite movies are. So I chose your top two favorite movies, and I'm going to test your memory as to where you think things are up to, you know, at this point. So I'm first going to go with the obvious one that everyone who knows Richard Kirkham knows that this is one of your top movies. So what is happening in Jaws at this time?
In minute 34?
Yes, in minute the end of 34, you know, between 34 and 36, I give it a little bit of leeway. you know, because different versions of the movie might
I don't know how close I'm going to get to this. I would say that's probably right about the time that Richard Dreyfuss's character is showing up.
Okay, no, he showed up a little bit before this. These minutes are basically, you know, where they string up the tiger shark. And
right.
And then, you know, there's Richard Dreyfuss's character is introduced to the mayor, you know, and they're trying to, you know.
Right. They're on the dock with the tiger shark.
That's right. And he's trying to convince them.
A what?
That's right. He's trying to convince them that it is not the shark that has killed the little kid. So, yeah.
So I'm off about 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's still pretty good. I mean, I'm putting you on the spot here. You didn't have any, you know, advanced.
I had no foreknowledge of this. Yes,
none whatsoever. None whatsoever. He shows up in at minute 28 is when he actually shows up.
Okay.
In what's the name of the Amity? Amity. Right.
It means friendship, you know.
Yes, of course it does. Of course. So the second one is. Let's see if you can guess what movie you think I chose, Richard.
Well, did you do Lawrence of Arabia?
No.
Did you do...
Did I do what?
The Adventures of Robin Hood?
Yes, I did. The Adventures there of Robin Hood. So what is happening in The Adventures of Robin Hood from 1938? Now, I know that this is Richard's favorite movie. At least it was when he put it on his website a few years ago. And I remember I remember you and I having a debate. You and I had a debate, and I always thought that it was Jaws, and apparently it wasn't. Jaws was number two, so... You know, The Adventures of Robin Hood. What is happening at this time in the movie?
My guess is that this is probably when the Merry Men are in, you know, taking the gold from Gisborne and the sheriff in Sherwood.
And you would be very correct. It's that happens around 36, but yeah, you know. It's when they attack them, you know, when the So yeah, very good. I give you you get points for that. You're very close.
Excellent.
I every time I do this, I keep wondering if someone were to put me on the spot with the movies that I've done, if I would able to accurately think of them and
you could remember all that
stuff. I don't know. Yeah. Don't know. But I think it's a fun thing to do.
That's cool. I like it.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I hope my listeners are liking it too. All right. So for one final time this week, Richard, or this season, would you like to tell people where they can find Richard Kirkham?
I can be located at the LAM, which is the Large Association of Movie Blogs, which you can find at largeassmovieblogs.com. I'm the host of the LAMcast, the official podcast of the LAM, and the show is weekly, and you'll find every week on the LAM site. You can also read all of my blog entries on my two sites, Kirkham and Movie A Day, which are easily accessible by doing a Google search. If I see a movie in a theater, I'm going to post about it.
All right, very cool. So in other words, in the next few days, or for me, but in the past for everyone else, we'll see a review of the 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi.
That's right. You will.
Oh, can't wait. Can't wait. Now, hopefully tell me what the differences are, you know, if there are any differences.
I got to remember what the differences are, because I think this will be the special edition kind of stuff. And I'll have to compare it to the original versions. I'm going to have to get out my laser discs and look at the movies before they got changed.
I mean, is this a new version that they've even done?
No. It's just, I'm sure it's whatever the updated version is, the most recent Blu-ray.
It's not a new version that they did for the 40th anniversary. Then.
I don't think there's anything particularly special about it. No.
Okay. Well, it is Return of the Jedi, so there's a lot particularly special about it, but nothing new.
That's right.
Exactly. All right. Very cool. Well, enjoy that. Be sure to report in.
I will do so.
Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. Richard, thank you very much for joining me this week.
I was glad to be here. You know, next time I'll use a stronger mouthwash and we can stay together longer.
maybe, you know, aftershave also. But, yeah. And when you decide to shave off your beard. So, yeah. All right, well, I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, everybody.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.